It means that when life unfolds in ways that we might not necessarily choose, we have an inner sense of peace that we can ground in. That peace that passes all understanding. Remember when I first heard that passage, I was like, a peace that passes all understanding. No, no, I want to understand it. I want to figure it out. What do you mean? That passes understanding? And then as I encountered life, the older I got, the more I appreciated the wisdom of that. Because when I think I've got something figured out, Spirit has this wonderful sense of humor and likes to turn the box upside down and say, now what does it look like? Because everything is holy. The beginning in Genesis, God makes the world in all the different aspects. Creation takes form from the void. And what is the response? It's all good. And then we come along, and as Simon said, God made us in its image, and we returned the favor. Where we tend to think of the divine with the way we look at the world, which tends to be a world of polarity and duality, up and down, in and out, good and bad, right and wrong, rather than that place of oneness and unit of consciousness, and realizing that the book that we're studying, The Wisdom of Jesus, is about Jesus as a teacher of transformational consciousness into a real consciousness of oneness, of unity, of unitive thinking. The modern scientists would call it a holographic universe, where the whole contains all the parts, but all the parts also contain the whole. If we are part of a divine creation, having this experience, then everything truly is holy. This month, for the rest of this month, we're going to be looking at the five unity truths that are kind of the core foundational theology, as much as unity has a theology. These are the ways we view the world. It's the lens through which we view the world, not with a perspective that this is the only way to do it, because there are many different spiritual paths for many different people. And to judge them harshly because they are not ours means we're not getting the message at all. Because the message of all the different spiritual traditions is how we are all one. We have more in common than we have different. That we all want to be loved and we want to love. We want our families to be safe and cared for. We want to have lives that have meaning and purpose. And so the way we view the world is so much how it unfolds. It's not seeing is believing, it's believing is seeing. And so we'll be looking at these five truths. We're going to do two today, two next week, and then the final week we're going to be doing the final one. Today we're going to be doing one presence and one power in the world and within us. Next week we're going to be talking about the power of thought, but also the power of prayer, claiming and surrendering simultaneously. They say when you hit a point of paradox, you found the divine, because the divine is oneness, it is all. And then the last Sunday of this month, we'll be talking about how we are each souls on this spiritual journey, called to be here not only for ourselves but collectively. And I'm going to share with you five points for hope, which I think with everything that's going on in the world will be something that will be helpful for all of us. So today, everything is holy now. One power and one presence. There is one presence and one power. God, by whatever name one chooses to call that divine spark from which we all emanate. And number two, the presence of God indwells all things. We call it the Christ within, but we honor that presence in all beings regardless of spiritual path. So we begin with the premise that God, Spirit, the word God is so charged for so many people. I actually, when I write it now, spell it G-O-D-D-E, which is the new theological way of doing it that embraces the divine masculine and the divine feminine and helps decharge the word a little bit. Personally, I find I almost always use divine or the presence, because that to me more accurately pictures it. It takes it out of that realm that came when I was growing up, that God is a man with a long white beard up in the sky that's got a checklist. Okay, you did this good, you did this bad. And then at some point there's going to be this huge reckoning. My dad, when he was dying, we talked quite a bit, because having been a nurse and a chaplain, I've been present with so many people and that incredible portal of shift. And he was really nervous. He said, Pam, he said, he'd grown up Southern Baptist, and if you didn't believe exactly the way they did, you were going to go to hell. No doubt about it. And he said, I didn't believe that, which is why I left the church when I was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s. And he said, but, he said, you talk about a spirit, a spiritual realm, and that I'm a soul. And he said, that's such a different way of looking at it. And he said, I really like that. And I hope that's true, because if they're right, I'm in really deep yogurt. I was so blessed to be there. I've shared with you on a few occasions that I was blessed to be with my dad when he took that last breath. He'd been a pilot in World War II, and he was struggling and doing his last breath, and I just said, Daddy, fly to the light. Fly to the light. And I literally felt him go up toward my right shoulder, and we made eye contact for one more second as I felt his spirit go. He got a look on his face like a kid that had seen a Christmas tree for the first time. My dad, who was very conservative, organized, quiet Virgo, smiled this radiant smile. And it was such a gift to me as well, because I believed it and knew that I knew that I knew, but there's always this little bit, oh, if they're right, I could really be a deep yoga. And on his face, I got the confirmation of everything that I believed, that there truly is one presence and one power. In the early Judaic tradition and in the early Christian church, there was just one power and one presence, God. It wasn't this duality of there's Jesus and there's the devil. You're going to go to heaven, you're going to go to hell. That wasn't part of the equation. In fact, in the Old Testament, Satan is actually an angel sent by God to give you opportunities to grow your faith, to develop spiritual muscle. It's not sent to make your life miserable and to curse you at all. It was considered part of divine experience because everything is holy. It wasn't until the intertestamental period between the Old and the New Testament that Zoroastrianism was really a big philosophy in that area and impacted almost everything. And their champion was Ahura Mazda. And Ahura Mazda was the savior sent from the divine to remind us who we are so that we can return to the divine. But it was set in the context of a battle between good and evil, between archons and angels, between principalities and powers. And so it tees up this, there's a good guy, there's a bad guy. It's not everything truly is one. Do we live in a realm of polarity and duality? Absolutely. But is that the essential truth of where we are, what we're doing, and who we are? No. We are expressions, infinite expressions of this energy, this divine energy, and how boring it would be if we all looked exactly alike and sounded exactly alike. That's the beauty of this realm. And the duality and the polarity are so that we can have different experiences, but find a center place of balance and peace, where we really live and have our being in that divine presence. An analogy that I've always loved is that the presence of the divine for us, we're like fish in the sea trying to figure out what the ocean is. It's all around us. It's everything. The presence of the divine is within us, and it's all around us. It's eminent. It's right here with us, but it's also transcendent. It's greater than we could ever imagine and ineffable. It is ineffable where you can't define it, but it also can be experienced. The peace that passes all understanding. Pretty good deal. I like that. Thomas Keating, in Centering Prayer, talks about praying and finding the center and the divine presence there. And then from that place of center, radiating out to the very circumference and farthest spaces of all you can perceive. And the divine is equally present in all of those places. I've always loved Romans 8. All things work together for good for those who love God. And also, nothing can separate us from God. Nothing. And it goes into not powers, not principalities, not aeons. Nothing can separate us from the presence of the divine. The divine is the ocean, the unitive field, the matrix, the cosmos in which we live and move and have our being. H. Emily Cady, who wrote Lessons in Truth, talked about the importance of having some spiritual time each day where you go to that center. You fill yourself with the divine, and then you let it radiate out, becoming aware of it everywhere. Everything is holy here, everything is holy all around. She says, when we go into a part, into the stillness of divine presence, we may come forth into the world of everyday living with new inspiration, increased courage, power for activity and overcoming. Practice the presence of God as you would practice music. Isn't that wonderful? Practice the presence of God as you would practice music. That constant abiding presence of the divine is so beautifully defined in two scriptures that are almost everyone's favorites, that they come back to over and over again. The first one comes from Luke. He said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, or what you will wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap, they have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to the span of your life?" If you're not able to do even something as small as that, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, and yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not clothed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? Do not keep striving for what you are to eat or what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying. Peace that passes all understanding. For it is the nations of the world that strive after these things, and your Father, your divine presence, knows you need them. Instead, strive for the kingdom, and all of these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Don't worry, don't strive, don't be afraid. Wayne Dyer said the ravens are about allowing. Don't worry, be one with the flow. Allow your life to be what it is and look for the divine in it. The lilies don't strive. Wayne Dyer said this is about affirming. It's claiming your vibrational harmony with the oneness of life, with Source. And the flock, be not afraid, is activating. It's saying, I choose faith and love instead of fear and doubt. And so I step into my life empowered and willing to find that divine presence in everything. And seek ye first the kingdom of heaven and all else will be added. He said, this is the very presence of the divine. If you open to notice, you cannot help but appreciate. And as you are filled with awe, so that grows and more aware you become. He said, the key is seek ye first the kingdom. Start there. Start at that place at the core of your being where you connect with the divine. And then you become like the ravens and the lily. And you become a flock that abides in peace and in the willingness to be present in the world. My other favorite one that we all know and love that frequently is stopped partway through also comes from Luke, which, by the way, is the most universal and inclusive of the Gospels. So I say to you, ask and it will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened for you. Usually it stops there. And they say, well, you have to go a certain way to get that. They forget to read the very next verse. For everyone who asks receives. And for everyone who searches, they will find. And for everyone who knocks, the door will be opened. There is one presence and one power. That presence of God indwells all things. We, at the beginning of this year, have just set intentions. What we wish to vision for the coming year. I ask you now to do the next part of that, which is to open, to release it, to co-create it with Spirit, whatever the unfoldings are in the coming year. If it was left to me, I know how I think it should unfold or could unfold. The thing that I've learned is when I invite in this presence that meets me right here, when I'm willing to be a raven and a lily instead of somebody who is worrying about everything, everything changes. A peace descends that no matter what unfolds, I know the divine is with me in many forms. Some of those I am so blessed to have with skin on. that walk through this world with me. Joel Goldsmith in Practicing the Presence says one of my favorite passages that I'd like to conclude with. There is only one missing link in the entire chain of harmonious living. That is the practice of the presence of God, consciously, daily, and hourly. Until we have the divine, we have nothing. But the moment we have the divine, we have all there is in the world. In seeking the allness, we shall have all forms necessary to our unfoldment. Everything is holy now. Let's say it together. Everything is holy now.